This is the First Time Podcast,
where we talk writing, publishing, and all of the feels.
It's conversations between us
and conversations with Australian and international authors about their craft, their books, and the writing life. I'm Kate Mildenhall.
And I'm Catherine Collette. Welcome to the First Time Podcast, Season 6. This podcast was recorded and produced on the unceded lands of the Wurundjeri and Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultures.
Good morning, first-time listeners. It's 8 here, and I am on my own. For those of you who follow us on Instagram, you might already know the reason why, that I am the person totally responsible for failing to press record at the appropriate moment. When Catherine and I managed to squeeze in one 45-minute slot in our crazy busy weeks that we had managed to plan and recorded, can I just say, like a kick-ass 40 minutes of chat. We were on. We chatted about everything. We chatted about camping. We talked about van life. I chastised Catherine about her potential choice of caravan and told her she should go with the camping trailer. We had great recommendations, which don't worry, we will be giving you at another time. We were just on. We had a bit of a kind of a whinge and then we got over it, and it was the kind of a conversation that I went into feeling a little bit kind of blur about the week and came out feeling better, which is what often happens when I talk to my co-host Catherine Collette. Of course, that all fell in a heap when we realized that I hadn't press record. Anyway, it's been delightful, totally delightful. Thank you so much to everyone who has laughed with us, told us they were having a wine for us, or generally commiserated on the socials. It is, of course, a very first world problem not to have pressed record on one tiny little episode. But in the week that we were having with the kind of schedules that we've both got at the moment, it did feel like quite a lot. Anyway, I'm here. Very quickly, I'm not going to take up much of your time because I do want to introduce our fantastic feature segment with Alison Ferguson and her surprisingly great. It's not surprising that it's great. It's a surprising and great debut novel, Grey Nomad, and we'll get to that in just a moment. But there's a couple of things that I wanted to let you know about. First, a massive congratulations this week to Megan Rogers, our follower first-timer, whose debut novel, The Heart is a Star, is officially out this week. We hope that you've been enjoying our conversations with Megan about all of the feels in the lead-up to the launch of her debut novel. We'll be talking to her this week. You don't get to hear it for a little while about launch day feels and how she feels after her big party to launch the book in Melbourne. So that's out this week. Start of a new month, heaps of fantastic books out. Some of them are ones that we recommended when we recorded, and we'll be talking about them with you next week. One other thing to put in your calendars, you will have heard me speak before about my absolute lit crush on Claire Christian, whose first book, first adult rom-com, It's Been a Pleasure, Noni Blake, was my absolute standout favourite a couple of years back, and I recommend it to everyone. She has written a new book. It's called West Side Honey. I absolutely adore it, and I'm so excited to have the honour of launching it in Melbourne on Monday, May the 8th at Readings Carlton. It is, as always, a free event, but you need to book online. There will be a link in our show notes. Until then, we hope that you enjoy this conversation with the fabulous Alison Ferguson, and we promise that we will press record next week. Have a great day, first timers. Today, our featured book segment is brought to you by Brio Books, and I'm delighted to be talking to author Alison Ferguson about her novel, Grey Nomad. Alison Ferguson completed a Bachelor of Arts degree with a major in writing in the early 70s, but was led astray by the need to make a living. After qualifying and working as a speech pathologist, she completed a PhD in linguistics and moved into academia. researching, lecturing, and publishing in the area of clinical linguistics. Besides metamorphosing into a science fiction writer, she is trying to knit less and walk more. Welcome, Alison. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure to be here.
To start off with, Alison, can you please give us the pitch for Grey Nomad?
Well, I tried many pitches along the way, but the pitch that seemed to work was that this is a story about a 70-year-old a woman who's a long-standing member of the Country Women's Association, but she's always longed for more. And when alien visitors arrive and offer guided tours of their spaceship, she gets to have an adventure she never would have imagined.
What I love about the pitch, and I'll ask you about the way that this book got published shortly, but what I love about the pitch is that normally at the point that someone says alien spaceship, I switch off and I no longer want to read that book. But this one I just enjoyed so much, and it's made me think that maybe I need to go back and read all of the space books now, Alison, because I enjoyed it so much. I enjoyed the humour. I enjoyed Joyce so much. I'm not an expert, obviously, in this genre. Can you tell us a little bit about where this story came from and your influences to write this?
Well, the science fiction influence goes right back to I was a keen fan of the very first original Star Trek we watched on television, and I've continued to read science fiction all my life, and there's a lot of really good stuff happening at the moment. This book comes about because I always wanted to get back to writing fiction, so I retired a little ahead of time. And unlike many academics, I went, no, don't give me any honorary stuff. I'm writing. And so for the first time, I had that absolute indulgence to write. But you can't write all, well, I can't write all day. And when you watch television, you need something to do. So I thought, I need a craft. And again, I'm not a crafty person. So I thought, well, I need someone to teach me. So I joined a knitting group, the Knitting Guild of New South Wales, and I go to the Newcastle group, and there are 40 very keen knitters who turn up every month, and they taught me how to crochet. They corrected my dreadful knitting and showed me that you can make holes deliberately and not by mistake. And I found them very entertaining, and I thought the number of different lives they've all led, they make fascinating group of women, and I really wanted to write about that sort of woman at that sort of age. What I didn't realise until I actually finished the book was that, in a way, people used to ask me, is it biographical? I thought, well, I didn't get on a spaceship, though. But in a sense, it really was. Because by the time I came out the other end, I thought, really what I've done is catch my own spaceship, and it's been called writing, and I've found a way into a new way of living, which has been a real journey.
Oh, I love that. What a great phrase, catch your own spaceship. The log line for this book is so terrific. It's time for an old new hero. And Joyce is an absolute joy to read, and I'm imagining she was a joy to write. What was important to you? I get this background now that you were in this knitting group and looking at these women around you. What was important to you about getting this older protagonist, who we don't see very much, especially not a female one, about getting her right on the page? Yes.
I was reading the book club I go to. We'd read quite a few stories where older women are cute and quirky and feisty. Mm-hmm. I think Joyce is funny. But I didn't want her to be cute.
Yeah, she's not cute.
And because I think older women are tough. And so I wanted to capture that. So I had a few things I was treading a bit of a line on, because I thought a lot of things that happen, a lot of the humour arises because she's a fish out of water. So this is all new to her. And that's fun to write. But I wanted it to be obviously not true, but credible at the moment that someone her age could do the things she did and enjoy the things she did while she was on her journey. Mm.
It struck me. I know that there's something that I've heard talked about before with female superheroes in like things like the Marvel movies, that you never see them putting their hair in a ponytail. They don't have a hair tie wrapped around their wrist, which so many women do, because that you could not fight the super enemy without your hair tied back. And what I really loved about Joyce was also this very clear sense of her physicality, that she was aware of the things that her body could and couldn't do in this space, which I think women are constantly aware of, and also really keenly aware of the need to wee, which you never see. And anyone from the point of childbirth all the way through, any woman knows very acutely that you can't go out and save the world if you've got a full bladder.
That's right. And you do need to know where those toilets are.
You really do. I love that. I thought that was one of the aspects, one of the elements of getting her so right. As I started preparing to speak to you, Alison, I learned, obviously, that we just said in the bio that your field of expertise is in linguistics, which then kind of made total sense to me about this intricate setup of languages and translation and these alien languages that you have created. Can you tell us, how do you go about making up an alien language?
Well, my area of linguistics has many sub areas.
Yep.
And my area is in sociolinguistics, and within that, clinical linguistics. So while I am fascinated by what goes on in the brain, I'm equally interested in what goes on between people. So it's the social interaction and how language arises in that interaction. So that was where I was wanting to spend my time. Of course, all of us are fascinated by the brain, so, you know, you can't help but go there. I did develop a whole section that we ended up leaving out about where in the brain telepathy is, but we got rid of that. But as I said, it's more the interaction. And I really wanted to paint a picture of Joyce as a woman who's been on committees since the year dot. You know, and she's always been very skilled as a communicator. Mm. And I think that there's something about that skill, which is really about how women in particular, but other people as well, use language to negotiate their way through life.
You talked at the beginning about this, the fact that you had practiced the pitch a few times, and I want to talk about your path to publication. There is this idea, I know, of emerging writers as cool young things just starting out in life at the same time as they're starting out in their writing careers, but we know that that is absolutely not always true, and we know that from our first-time listeners as well. How has it been for you to traditionally publish your first novel now? What helped? What hindered? How did it happen?
Yeah. The story began as a short story. I belong to a writers group, Fellowship of Australian Writers, which involves a lot of people who, similar to me, have always wanted to write. So we write, we critique each other's work, we encourage each other, and there's a peer group. But my experience back when I was in my early 20s, in a writing course, because I knew just how much there was. It wasn't a case of just jotting a few things down and calling it writing. So I knew that there was a lot of craft that I had to go back to, and I'd left that behind in my 20s. And the awful bit about starting to write again was that I hadn't grown up, that my writing, I thought, was about exactly where I left it.
Wow.
Now, in between, I've written a lot of academic works, but it's a very different sort of writing. And so I have done a lot of courses. I'll sign up to anything that sounds fun. In fact, the pandemic was brilliant for me because I got to do it all online and didn't have to travel as much. And I've got a lot out of those courses. And I've always thought, well, doing PhD took 6 years part-time. So I sort of, that was my, I set myself that. I said, well, okay, 6 years to get craft. And so I spent a lot of time writing, rewriting. I wrote other things. Joyce went in the drawer many times. And then she came out again. I went along to Literary Speed Dating, Australian Society of Authors. Mm-hmm. And what happened there was interesting. There was some of the people I pitched to took a look and told me to do a course without hearing my story.
Uh-huh.
I thought, well, bad luck.
Yeah, you don't get me.
You don't get me. But other people went, ooh, I'd read that, you know. Mm. So I'd get to send the first chapter summary stage. I've been there three times. I'd get this really nice rejection. I'm very happy with those rejections. You know, we loved it, but we can't see how we'd sell that. You know, who would read this?
Did you change your pitch at those times, or did you just keep going with different publishers?
I have tried so many different pitches. And that's where the writing group is so fabulous, because we practice our pitches and we try different things. Something I've enjoyed about short stories, I like writing short stories for a competition. I like a deadline.
Yes.
The Brio books put up a prize, an award for an unpublished manuscript. And I set that as my target. It was more to really knock it into shape. I'd already, I do NaNoWriMo, National Novel Writing Month, which I love. I just enjoy it. The energy of the month of November is high. Yep. So, and there's a lot of fantasy, speculative fiction sort of genres there. So you get a lot of support for having you go. And so I'd already done a lot of development through that. And then I did a whole whack of revising. And I put it to that award. And they put me on a shortlist. I felt, this is worth pursuing.
Mm.
I was at the point where I thought, really, you know, give it a miss, give it to your friends.
Yeah.
But so then I signed up to Queensland Writers Centre. They two programs, publishable and adaptable, and they're fabulous. That was all online. I just got so much out of it. And one in particular was a brilliant set on editing.
Mm.
And later after that program, I contacted that editor and said, can you give me a developmental edit? So tell me why I can't get past second. And so she gave me some fabulous focus feedback on what can tip the difference between good writing, like readable writing, and this is now something I want, somebody would put money behind to publish. So that was just enormously helpful. So I used the tips and advice she gave me to get another rewrite. And after another round of pitching, without any luck, I went back to Brio Books, David Henley, and said, you were kind enough to run this prize. Would you have another look? And he did. And he too gave me some more advice, pretty radical advice. But I take that sort of feedback very seriously. And I don't always do what somebody suggests. But if they've got that suggestion, that's for a reason. So I take that and I try and think, well, why was that confusing? Why did that need clarification? Why are those chapters dead? And then I'll try and work on how to get around that, perhaps in the way they suggested, but perhaps in a completely different way.
Alison, that is like a masterclass, what you have just given us on your path to publication about getting out into the community, learning the craft, and then taking on feedback, things which people find incredibly difficult to do. And the fact that you made it through your persistence and determination, but also taking on that feedback is just such brilliant advice for our listeners to listen to. Of all those things that you did, finding a writer's group, you know, having support around you, taking on advice, doing those courses, if you could share one piece of writing advice with our listeners, what would that piece of advice be, Alison?
I'm interested in the idea of persistence, but not unproductive persistence, not beating your head against a brick wall. I have written other things, as I said, during that time. I had a go at writing historical fiction, loved doing the research. I don't know that I nailed the genre. But anyway, it's out there. If anyone wants to find my historical fiction. And that was self-published. which I enjoyed, and the self-publishing control. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
But as I say, not unproductive. Like, I had to leave that behind. That's why I self-published that. I thought, really, I've got to get this done. I like completing things. So I completed it and I can put it away, which to me, that frees me up. I've got, there are more ideas coming and so on. And I have another thing I've written, the novel, which is more based around speech pathology. And that's not grabbing anyone's attention at the moment. But I know I will persist with that. But I have to draw back from it. I know I'm very aware that something, I think I need to rethink how I'm going about that one.
Such good advice. I love the idea of productive persistence and not unproductive persistence.
Thank you. That's the catchphrase.
Alison, can you please recommend to us a debut book or something that you're reading, any time, any genre?
Well, I am reading some debut books at the moment, but actually what's caught my attention most at the moment, I love audiobooks because I can knit while I listen, and I've also enjoyed watching the Endeavour series on television. But I've never read the Inspector Morse books, and I thought, oh, I'll go back and see, you know, what's the narrator like for those books? And they've had, you know, great narrator, Samuel West. And so I went back and read them, and what's really interesting about going that far, like the first one I enjoyed, but I had quibbled, you know, I was giving him writing advice. but I'm up to the third one at the moment, and oh, you can see the experience with the characters and the flow, and just listening to how he's done it is just fabulous.
That sounds like when people talk about they're switched from reader brain to writer brain. And when you are taking notice for the writerly aspects of a text, it's a marvellous thing. Alison, where can people find you? Do you have events coming up where, other than going out and buying Grey Nomad, where can they find out more about you and see you in action?
Well, I'm on a panel at the Brisbane Writers Festival coming
Fantastic.
Up in May. And I'm on a panel which is delightfully called Coming of Rage.
Coming of Rage. I love it. We will put the link to that in our show notes as well. And if people want to find your other works, should they go to your website, Alison? Where can they find you?
Well, I do have, I don't know what we call it. It's called Backstory Press. It's a bit of a lazy blog. But I don't sell books through there. My books are available through online retailers, Booktopia, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, those sorts
Fantastic.
Of places.
We will put links in there. Alison, it's been a real joy to speak to you. Thank you so much for sharing the story behind Grey Nomad and your writing, and good luck for book two and what I hope is book three as well.
You never know. You never know. You Thank you very much. Nice to have met you and nice to be talking about writing.
You can find the show notes for today's episode on our website, thefirsttimepodcast.com. Get in touch with us via Instagram or Twitter at @thefirsttimepod, or you can leave us a message on the website. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to The First Time Podcast. We record this podcast virtually on the unceded lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past and present, and we extend that to our First Nations guests and listeners. Sound production by Phoebe 80, who we can employ because of the wonderful support of our patrons via Patreon. Thank you so much for making this podcast possible.